Well, we are talking here at the Mountain Heritage Literary Festival with David Joy, who has had a celebrated new book, Where All Light Tends to Go. Thank you very much for being here, Dave.
Thank you for having me.
Why don't we start off by you tell us what you want our listeners to know about Where All Light Tends to Go.
It's kind of a coming-of-age story about a young boy who's grown up in a family where his father sells methamphetamine, and it's kind of a journey for this 18-year-old kid to try and transcend a family legacy of violence. And so he's grown up in an environment that he's not really fit for, and he's just trying to find his way out of that as best he can. It's kind of a balance between hope and fate, I'd say. And just kind of the reality of circumstance.
I know Larry Brown has been a writer you've admired, and one thing that one of the best lessons I ever learned was from Larry, saying that all great writing is about trouble. And so you've got plenty of trouble going on in there, don't you? And did you think about that while you were writing the book? You know how you have to constantly put your readers in that place of trouble.
Yeah, I think I was thinking about momentum and propulsion. I think Larry does that really well. You think of a novel like Joe, and you think of that opening and the way that he sets that scene, and it's trouble from the start. I think of somebody like Daniel Woodrell, the opening to a book like Tomato Red, and I was really cognizant of trying to create propulsion. You know, Donald Ray Pollock's here at the festival this weekend, and I think he does that really well. I think all of his short stories move really quickly. His novel, Devil All the Time, it moves really quickly. And so most of the writers that I admire most, I think, are able to create that type of movement.
Like you said, your book deals with a drug problem in rural America. What was the most surprising thing you learned about that during your research? I mean, people have so many stereotypes about methamphetamine, and everybody seems to feel like they know about it, but what don't people really know about it? What don't people get, and why is it so prevalent in rural areas?
I don't necessarily know why it's as prevalent as it is where I live, but to date it's still... Methamphetamine and prescription drugs are the epidemic in Jackson County, North Carolina, where I live. You see it every week. And so I grew up surrounded by drugs. And so I was aware of that culture very early on. Everybody that I grew up around faced those challenges in some way or another. But as far as in Jackson County, I'm really good friends with... the book's dedicated to the fire chief in Cashers, the assistant fire chief, and this another gentleman that works in the sheriff's department. And so we'd sit there and talk about these things. And you see in a place like Jackson County, you see the same people arrested over and over and over. And if you don't know them directly, you know their aunt, or you go to church with their mom, and so you have some type of connection with them. And I think really maybe that's the difference between drugs and crime in an urban environment versus a rural environment, is that in an urban environment, I think you're removed from it, versus in a rural environment, it hits home.
One thing that's really interesting about all that to me is that, you know, lots of times people just will say, they're on meth, whatever, and people get reduced so easily, you know, when they're on hard drugs like that. And so one thing that your book does is give a humanity to people and make them three-dimensional and complex. And, I mean, that's a hard thing to pull off, isn't it? I mean, because people have such preconceived notions about people, and they don't want to think about circumstances or the way people get in their situations. So... what can you say about that while writing the book? Was that a challenge, or?
I think that that's my biggest concern as a writer, is trying to to humanize every person that I write. And it's not that I'm trying to justify what they do. It's that I'm trying to show what led to that. And I think that's one of the things Larry did so well. You know, if you think about father and son, I can't remember that the main character's name in that. But anyways, you know, the guy sexually assaults at least two women, and I think attempts a third. And so you've got this character who you know, has sexually assaulted women. He killed a guy when he was drunk driving. He kills a monkey. You know, but there's this scene where he catches that fish, and he lets that fish go, and it's this moment of humanity in him, and that creates this, it creates complexity. And that's the way the world works. You know, I think we'd like to see things in black and white, but they're not. And I think we like to see things on the evening news and think we're nothing like those people, when the reality is we're very much like those people.
Yeah, to stay on Larry, one thing I remember, a book review came out about father and son in a big national paper, and the reviewer said, Larry Brown writes about the characters you never want to have supper with. And my response was, well, those are the people I've been having supper with my whole life, you know. I think a lot of times the media in general forget that there's a whole America that's not just like everybody in the media centers of New York and Los Angeles, you know, and so it's so reductive. And so that's why we need books like these, for sure. Well, Where All Light Tends to Go has been described as a book about the line between the sacred and the profane. So to you, what is the sacred and what is the profane? Or is it more about what's, you know, in between those two things?
I think it's very much a book about balance. And so I think it's a balance between hope and fate. Jacob wants nothing more than to get out of the situation he was born into. But that's a lot easier said than done when you live in a place like Jackson County. A lot of those kids that grew up there won't ever leave there. And a lot of, you know, I'm sure that's true where you live as well. And as far as kind of that balance between, I think that is the balance between the sacred and the profane. And as far as that idea, you know, I think that ties back to Chaucer. You know, Chaucer was doing that, and so for Jacob, it's there's this line in that novel where he's talking about what it's like to walk into a tunnel and see no light ahead of you, and he said it's almost worse to look back where you can see the light behind you. Because it stops you from moving forward, and so it's almost worse to hope at all. It kind of weakens you, and I think, you know, I think that's really what I was going for, was trying to create that type of balance of somebody who desperately wants to get out, but also realizes that I'm never getting out of here.
Right. Well, you're a real music lover. So first, let's talk about who some of your all-time favorite musicians are and why they have spoken to you in such a way.
I think the greatest songwriter to ever live is Townes Van Zandt. And, you know, I can't remember this gentleman's name. Bruce, he was one of the lead singers of the Flatlanders. Great musician, but I saw him just the other night in this little dive. There's only 12 of us in there, but he knew Towns and he knew Blaze Foley. Blaze Foley's another one of my biggies. But he said that Towns told him one time, there's only two types of music in this world, and it's blues and zippity-doo-dah. And I think, you know, what he was getting at, if you listen to his music, there's this sorrow and there's this I don't know, it hits you in the stomach. And I think, you know, I read a lot of Buddhism, and I very much ascribe to that first noble truth that all life is suffering. And if you ascribe to that thought and then you listen to somebody like Towns Van Zandt, or you listen to Blaze, I don't know. I mean, there are times that I just sit there and I cry listening to his music. And with Jacob, you know, with this novel, it was Rex's Blues was the song. I would listen to that song every day. And it's very much, that's the theme for Jacob McNeely in that novel. But I think those two are my favorite songwriters of all time. I grew up listening. Daddy played, you know, Willie Nelson and CCR on vinyl. And he'd sing Janis Joplin, play guitar, hymns. Grandma always sang hymns. I think that's really where I'm rooted is in that music.
What's the record that you're listening to over and over right now, or you know, more than one? What are you listening to?
He's got a song called "What Are You Listening To?" Chris Stapleton. I think "Traveler's" the best album that's come out this year. I think it's been a long time coming. If you know his work, you remember him from Steel Drivers. You know, all of his stuff's been recorded heavily. Sturgill, everybody's listening to Sturgill. I'm really anticipating that new Jason Isbell album. You know, he's only released that one single, 24 Frames, but that song's incredible. I think he's probably the best songwriter doing it right now. As far as some people, though, that other people might not know, I've really become obsessed with this songwriter named Willie T. Taylor. He's got this song called "Rue the Day" that just eats me alive. He's very, very close to Towns. I listen to Ryan Bingham. Listen to Pokey LaFarge, Elephant Revival. I listen to stuff all over the place. Cloud Cult. My musical tastes are very, very eclectic. But the thing that always rings true is the songwriting. I hear lyrics first. And if the lyrics aren't good, I won't listen. I'm not attached as much to the instrumental side of music as I am the songwriting.
I think you've sort of just summed up the music we play on Hillbilly Solid. You know, it's about the lyric, it's about the emotive quality of the song and where it takes you, and but definitely the writing is key. I guess that makes sense. As writers, we want well-written songs. Do you listen to songs while you're putting words on the page, you know, like when you're at your laptop or however you write, and or do you just, you know, sort of get the music in your head and then use it for your writing?
I think that I've done it both ways. I typically write in complete silence, but Pam Duncan gave me this, great novelist, great Appalachian novelist, but Pam Duncan gave me this idea one time that we needed an avenue to get back into a story. And one of the easiest ways for me to do that was a song. And so, for instance, with Where All Light Tends to Go, it was Towns Van Zandt's Rex's Blues. And it didn't matter what I was doing at the time. If I went back and I read a chapter and I listened to that song, I was back in the story. And so I used that song kind of in the same way that, like, you would use a singing bowl in meditation. Kind of you start it and it gets you to where you need to be, and then you move forward. But I've also, I wrote a book that wasn't published called Ruth. And I can remember writing the last chapter of that, playing Long As I Can See the Light. John Fogerty singing "Long As I Can See the Light" over and over, and just there became this rhythm to it. But that's one of the few times that I've ever written to music. Usually I write in complete silence.
Well, that's a great song. That's one of my favorites by CCR. What's the last great book you read?
I've read a lot of really great stuff this year. There's a guy named Brian Panowich that has a novel coming out next month called Bull Mountain. It's a great novel. It's set in Appalachian, Georgia. I read kind of broadly, or I try to. One of the better better novels I've read this year was a novel by a Nigerian named Chigozie Obioma. The name of the novel is The Fisherman. And it's kind of this Cain and Abel-esque story set in Africa. I think the best novel I've read this year is Robert Guype's Trampoline. I think that's one of the best debuts to come out of Appalachia in a long time. I don't read a whole lot of nonfiction, but I read a really great book called Phenomenal by Leanne Henyon. She's also an Appalachian writer. She lives in Boone in North Carolina. But that's a really great collection of essays that kind of function wholly as memoir together. I've Ben Percy's The Deadlands. I really love that novel. That came out in April. Right now I'm reading J. Todd Scott's, what's the name of it, The Badlands. And that's a really good novel so far.
All-time favorite novel?
That's really tough. Really tough.
You can say two or three.
All right. William Faulkner's As I Lay Dying, Cormac McCarthy's Sutri, Larry Brown's Joe, and James Galvin's The Meadow. If I could write the perfect novel, what I consider the perfect novel for me, like if I was at my peak and this is exactly what I want to do, it'd be James Galvin's The Meadow.
So can you give us a song that, you know, that you're loving right now that we can sign off with?
I think it's Willie T. Taylor's Life is Beautiful. It's probably my favorite song right now.
Sounds good. We sure do thank you for being here on Hillbilly Solid.
Thank you for having me.